Hello, party people, and welcome to Hammock Hours, an odd office hours where I'm sitting in a hammock outside of Victoria, Canada. This is one of those 360 videos where you can spin the video around and look. There is I believe, a Silver Sea cruise ship next to us. I am aboard the Virgin Brilliant Lady. Really love Virgin cruises. Have a really good time on these. You're about to see me embark on a bunch of cruises again. And I know it seems like a lot, but it's because I've been lumped into one of these frequent cruiser and frequent casino programs where they give me free cruises in the hopes that I'm going to spend money on the casino, which did on this cruise work, although I am actually ahead for this cruise, so that's kind of nice. It's one of those unusual cruises in that it's a repositioning cruise. This might be the first repositioning cruise I've ever taken. With repositioning cruises, the cruise ship moves from one place to another in order to prepare for a new season. So like right now, the Brilliant Lady was going from Los Angeles up to Vancouver, Canada, to start the Alaskan cruising season. What that means is that it's not great weather for cruise ships. It's not a great time to be in LA, and it's not a great time to be in Canada. It's the bridge in between the two seasons. Now, about a month from now, it'll be a good time to be in Alaska for Alaskan cruises, but that's probably one of the reasons why they gave it to us for free, because it not a very popular kind of thing to do, to take a cruise from LA to Vancouver in May. Not the best weather for that. But it's great weather for sitting out in a hammock and enjoying the chill spring morning and going through your questions from Poll Gab. The top voted question, let's see here. Let's see if I can click on it. My browser is not working because my cell signal is not the best out here. Come on through. Let me go hit the bookmark again. So there we go. Number one question is from Janice, who asks, "Hey Brent, I deleted millions of rows from an Azure SQL column store index. I want to reclaim my free space in a shared elastic pool without long table blocking, but ShrinkDB doesn't help much. Help." What you want is that DBCC ShrinkDB or ShrinkFile, I can't quite remember, has a new parameter that's like wait at low priority type thing. So go to the books online, go to the documentation and look at the documentation for Shrink. It was something that was added in the last 2 or 3 years. And I remember when they added it, I was like, this is stupid and they should really be removing Shrink from the product altogether. But questions like yours are a totally valid reason to shrink. The thing that I would say, though, is millions of rows isn't a lot in terms of column store, because column store has pretty good compression. So if you're only talking about a few gigabytes, I don't think that I would really care, because your database is likely going to grow over time. Anyway, the juice isn't really worth the squeeze. If you were talking about tens of gigabytes, then I'd, of course, be more interested in that particular juice. Next up, let's see here. I forget. I have like T-Mobile's bargain basement service when I'm in Canada, so this is a little sketchy on the slow service. Used to be a DBA asks, when you began your career, what were the IT functions or titles that people were worried about disappearing? At the time, they were worried about mainframe operators disappearing in two ways. One is that the jobs would disappear over time. Two is that the people would disappear over time, because it wasn't something hip that people were going into. It was the kind of domain that you saw 50, 60, 70-year-old people doing and gradually aging out. And as they retired, businesses were worried about replacing them, because nobody really wanted to go in as a mainframe administrator because it was going to be dead. Then it was kind of funny because Y2K happened and all of a sudden companies couldn't find mainframe administrators to do the work that needed to be done. So I knew people who came out of retirement just in order to make a lot of money really quickly working on Y2K stuff. That was very interesting. Since then, it has always been, for the last 25 years, it has always been the case that people think that developers are going to be unnecessary any minute now. Like, any minute now, we've got this really cool innovation that's just going to totally, nobody's going to need developers anymore. You're just going to be able to wave your hand in front of an interface. You're just going to be able to drag and drop pieces together and, like, connect pipes together, and magically you'll have the app you want. Now, you'll be able to just describe the thing you want, and AI will build it all for you. And to some extent, I think that that's true. It's true in the sense that developers' work is changing, but the number of developers has never gone down. It's always gone up, because the easier it is to build apps, the more apps that you see staying around that are legacy, the more maintenance work you need from developers, and the number of apps is never going to go down. I think there's the end of where your question is, that I don't think that there's been a lot of IT jobs that have ever really sunset. The tools that we use have changed dramatically. Like, if you know people who were doing reporting 20 years ago, they were using Crystal Reports. And these days it's, you know, more like Power BI or whatever open source dashboards people are building these days. But the functions themselves, it just doesn't. Next up, Not 2019 says, have you had any bad experiences with SQL Server 2022's adaptive memory grants? Twice I've needed to use emergency max grant percent hints because a query had big swings of memory. No, the problem that you're describing has less to do with the particular adaptive memory grants functionality and more to do with bad estimation, like the amount of estimation that SQL Server's doing. So in theory, adaptive memory grants should tune themselves over time, assuming that you have query store turned on. Then you get things like memory grant feedback persistence, so that instead of every time you restart SQL Server or every time you fail over a cluster, right now you may be experiencing big, huge, wide swings in memory. You want to get query store turned on so that those grants stabilize quickly and then stay stabilized. Query store is really the magic secret sauce, I guess secret sauce, it's well documented, the magic sauce, I suppose, which is the key to making a lot of new intelligent query processor features work. So check that out. Contest winner asks, hey Brent, when you give away bundles in your contests, is that yearly or lifetime access? It varies. Sometimes I give away yearly access, sometimes I give away lifetime access. Check the contest and it'll say in that particular contest which one it is. Next up, John Kurt says, thanks for helping us. We see some CMEM thread weights, and we already have cost threshold for parallelism 50 and max stop equals 8. A Microsoft page suggests max stop up to 16 in our case. What is your experience with max stop greater than 8? So you have a couple of questions in here. So first off, what fixes CMEM thread weights? That's a thing that's way more complex than I can possibly describe in here. Check out SPBlitz. SPBlitz is our totally free health check. And in there, if you're having serious CMEM thread weights, we have a link to a Microsoft document that goes into that in more detail. The second part of the question is, a Microsoft page suggests max stop up to 16 in our case. Generally speaking, you should follow that documentation. It's very well documented. It's support KB article 280-6539, the only document that I know by heart, and it's pretty good stuff. Your third question in there is, what is your experience with max stop greater than 8? For queries that where SQL Server can evenly distribute the work across that many cores, and that there's that much work that needs to be done, it can be really helpful. But remember, going from max stop 8 to max stop 16 means that queries can use twice as much CPU. Whenever you find yourself going, our queries need more than 8 cores worth of CPU, playing around with max stop probably isn't going to be the thing that gets you across the finish line. What you're going to want to do is start tuning those queries so that they use less CPU. Run SPBlitz cache with sort order equals CPU and with sort order equals average CPU, and then focus on those queries burning a lot of CPU. Start tuning them in order to make them improve better. So that's how you get order of magnitude improvements instead of just a 2x improvement. I know 2x sounds like a lot, like people get excited about their queries running twice as fast or 50% less duration, but that usually isn't what people want. They want orders of magnitude improvement. Used to be a DBA asks, hey Brent, LLMs are not deterministic. If users are using natural language to ask AI questions about data, then does that mean the query results are not deterministic? If you have something that's not deterministic, then the results you get out of it are not deterministic. So I'm going to rephrase your question again. Hey, I'm using something that's not deterministic. Does that mean it's not deterministic? Yes, that is what that means. Continues with, if I ask for month-over-month earnings, then will I always receive the same query result? No. That's what non-deterministic means, is that it can build the query in different ways at different times, depending on which model you use, depending on whether you get cheap with the model or whether you get expensive. And I have absolutely seen that case. Even with my own queries during some of my training classes, I use AI on screen, and I will ask the same question multiple times to different models and get different results. Like the cheapo model gives me different results than the expensive model. So welcome to the age of non-determinism. Blom says, do you ever tinker with things like Arduino, ESP32, Home Assistant, or Internet of Things to do stuff like monitor pool temperature or toggle the driveway lights? What you find when you work with technologists, there are two kinds of technologists. One kind of technologist gets really excited about putting in as much technology as they can. Every time they see a new shiny piece of technology, they want to put it in. They want to find uses for it. And that's cool. That can be exciting and fun. It can be a really cool hobby. The other kind of technologist doesn't want a printer at home, doesn't want anything electronic, doesn't want smart things, figuring stuff out. Because that kind of technologist has lived through AWS outages, has lived through internet outages, and so forth. I think over time, many, not all, but many technologists shift from the first category to the second category. I used to be in the first category. These days, I want my house to be reliable. I don't want any robots walking around the house, screwing around with things. I want a predictable, easy house where I don't have to worry when I walk up to the thermostat whether or not AWS US East is having an outage. True story, you can watch and go back through sites like The Register and all kinds of tech news sites. I want to say there's one called the Internet of Shitty Things. I think it's called a site called the Internet of Shitty Things, or Shitty Internet of Things, one of those kinds of things, where they go through and document these kinds of outages. And I just laugh when I see, you know, like AWS will have an outage or Azure will have an outage and people won't be able to adjust their home thermostats. And I'm like, why would you want that? The other thing that blows me away with that is, why would I want to deal with support calls from anything inside my house? I've had this with relationships, both my current and previous relationships, where I implemented something too smart at home and I had to deal with a frantic support call going, hey, the front door locks aren't working. The front door locks won't let me unlock them because they're having some kind of problem getting to the router. I don't ever want to have to deal with that again. I have respect for people who do. But when I'm done at the end of my tech day, I don't want to do tech support. I want things to just work. So that's me. And then we have one more here. Let's see. Let's fire open. I know I'm going to have to hit my bookmark again because my internet connection's gone wonky. The last one is from G Surgeon, who says, regarding SP space used, is there anything useful about the value of ratio of indexes related to data size? Are there any heuristics about whether or not a database may be over-indexed or under-indexed? I don't think so. That's never been useful for me, because you've got to keep in mind that it's driven also by how many writes and reads your database has. I've worked with data warehouses that had plenty of load time overnight, and they were totally fine with slow inserts, updates, and deletes in exchange for having every query be blazing fast during the day. I've also worked on the other extreme, where systems needed to ingest data as quickly as possible, and even a single index on a particular table would be a killer. So you could also try and build in some kind of fancy metric that also involves reads versus writes, but remember, it also has to take into account time of day, because maybe all the writes are happening overnight when we don't care about how many writes we're doing or how slow writes are. So really, this is why it all comes back to weight stats, where the very first module in my Mastering Server Tuning class, we talk about how you always want to make decisions based on whatever the server's top weight types are. Work to fix that problem. I think for decades, there was a problem with SQL Server in that we didn't have a lot of accurate metrics. We had some really inaccurate metrics that were really easy to measure. Fragmentation, read versus write space, or a read versus write quantity, not time of day, size of indexes versus size of data, number of indexes versus number of columns, and things like that. And so as a result, we measured that because that was all we had. But these days, you have much better metrics available. Use those better metrics instead. All right, well, I just got a message from Virgin that we are cleared customs in Victoria, so now we can go on shore and start poking around. I'll be honest, I don't really like Victoria, Canada. I know that there's a chance that I have a viewer who's in Victoria, Canada, not because I know anyone personally, but just because there's always a chance that someone's around. And I'm at the risk of offending anyone who lives in Victoria, I am not a really big fan of Victoria. I think this city is the perfect size balance between a city that's big enough to have interesting stuff in it, yet small enough to be quirky and fun. This hits that sweet spot where it's neither of those things. It's not quirky or fun, and it has some stuff in it that's not really all that interesting to me. I don't ever need to see a garden again, I think, as long as it's like a Canadian garden. I'm sorry, Canada, but you're not really known for the best gardens. Yes, I've seen Victoria's gardens, and they're not my cup of tea. There is a high tea service here at a hotel, but it's almost impossible to get into, and we have high tea here on the boat, so I'm kind of like, eh. But my partner wants to go off and see the gardens because she's never seen the gardens before. So you know what that means. We are going to see the gardens, and I am going to have a smile on my face while I see those gardens. So thanks for hanging out with me this morning and dealing with me sitting back and forth, zooming in and out on you. That probably made some of you sick, but it's really comfy being in a hammock. I love that Virgin has these hammocks on their cruise ship balconies. So have fun, and I will see y'all on the next Office Hours. Adios.